May the words of my mouth, the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. It's good to be home. It's good to be here. Last night we were looking at Esther, because that's what I ended up doing in Africa, asked to do. And I was reminded of Esther and Mordecai's surrender and what it looked like and how God honored them. And so our intention last night was to talk about Esther's surrender as well as Mordecai. Now, I don't know if what I said last night made any sense at all or not, but the fact that I was just there was the grace of God. So today I thought I would take the few minutes that we have and talk about Mordecai and his surrender. This is a scripture that we launched off from that describes what a surrendered life looks like, and what we could expect as the consequence. It says in Psalm 37, verse 4, "Delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart." To delight in the Lord means more than you're just excited about him. The word delight is a Hebrew word that means soft. It has the idea of delicate or dainty. In other words, something that's pliable, that's easy for him to work with, deal with. That's what he's saying here. A surrendered heart, those whose hearts are surrendered in the Lord, he will give you the desires of your heart. Because you're walking in such union with him, when you're totally surrendered as much as you know how, then he's allowed to live his life through you. Again, we said last night, he's not going to live your will through you. He's going to live his will through you. And as we're surrendered to his will, then we get to experience the supernatural life of Christ living in us and through us. And as that happens, our union becomes so experiential that his desires become my desires. And we looked at that last night in Esther, and how when she first, after her radical surrender, when she said, "If I perish, I perish," her approaching the king the first couple of times represented her coming to him kind of groveling. If it's pleasing in your sight, if I found favor in your sight. One time she fell down before him and in hopes that he wouldn't destroy her, because if you approach the king, the laws of the Medes and Persians were if you approach the king without being invited, then it was certain death unless he held out his scepter. And so twice that happened and he held out his scepter. But by the time the book ends, he's looking to her without her even asking, saying, "What else would you like for me to do?" That's growing union with Christ. Is that we're not begging him and pleading with him. We're walking in such oneness that he's saying, "Now, what would you like for me to do? What would you like for us to do, Chuck?" Because he knows my heart's his heart. We're not going in two different directions. Mordecai, if you remember the story of Esther, after Esther became queen, soon after she became queen, Mordecai, who worked in the gates, he was like, had a civil service job of some sort. And as he worked in the gates, he heard two doorkeepers of the palace plotting to kill the king. And so Mordecai, when he heard about it, he reported it to Esther. And it says in chapter 2 of the book of Esther that when the queen goes to the king, she says, "Mordecai, the man Mordecai, has reported that these two people are plotting to kill you." And that was recorded in the book of Chronicles, the history of the king's reign, in his presence. And yet, whether he was so distracted at the thought that somebody was going to kill him, because those kind of plots happened a lot, or I don't know what happened. It was the Lord in a lot of ways. So he just totally forgot about Mordecai. Didn't do anything to honor Mordecai. But 8 years later, when He has that night, that evening where he can't sleep. And he asked his servant to bring him the chronicles, the history of his reign, and just to read it to him. I've always been amazed at that. Like, who in the world would want that? Like, to go in and go to sleep, go, I want to hear the history book of all the laws and stuff and things that have happened. But as they came to the point where years earlier it reported where Mordecai had saved his life by exposing this plot. And the king said to his servant, what has been done to honor this man? And the servant said, nothing. And so then he asked the question, well, who's in the palace? And Haman, the bad guy, was in the palace. And he brings Haman in and he tells Haman, he said, Haman, what should I do if there was somebody I wanted to honor before all the people? And Haman thought he was talking about him. So Haman says, here's what you should do. You should get your horse that wears a crown when you go into battle or when you ride around it. Put the crown on the horse's head. Put one of your robes on this person and put him on that horse and have one of your leading princes, one of your chief noblemen, to lead that guy around all over the city going, this is what God does when he wants to honor someone. And the king says, that's a great idea. Go get Mordecai, put him on the horse, and you be the one, because you're the most important prince in all the land, and you carry him around and do that. Well, of course, Mordecai knew that he was in trouble. Because he had built a gallows 75 feet high to hang Mordecai. He was in the palace that morning to ask the king's permission to hang him. And so here's Mordecai riding around, being led by the man who had threatened him for years, who had created an edict to have every Jew, including him, annihilated 9 months away on one day. And this man, and it says, identifies him as one who hates the Jews or the enemy of the Jews 3 different times in the book. He's leading Mordecai around. The enemy who planned Mordecai's destruction was put in a position to dictate the terms of Mordecai's honor and blessing. And then after that, when Haman is hung on his own gallows, when it's exposed, when he's exposed to the king by Esther as the one who came up with this edict to kill all the Jews, including Esther, it says in chapter 7 or chapter 8 of Esther, as in, on that day, King Ahasuerus, the day that the bad guy was hung, the house of Haman, the bad guy, who was super wealthy, super powerful, the second most powerful person in the most powerful kingdom in the world, that he gave the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, to Queen Esther. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had disclosed to the king who he was to her, her guardian. First time the king knew that. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had given to Haman before, the symbol of his authority, the king's authority, that he had taken from Haman, and he gave it from Mordecai. And then Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now in chapter 9, when the battle starts, the battle ensues in one day, where the king had allowed Mordecai and Esther to write another edict that says, on the day where the people, the enemies of the Jews are going to try to kill them, all the Jews can kill them. And then all the people of the land pitched in to help the Jews because Mordecai is now the vice president. And so they feared him. And so 75,000 of the enemies of the Jews were killed in one day. 75,800, that's recorded. And it says about Mordecai in verse 3 of chapter 9 during the battle, even the princes of the provinces and the satraps and the governors and those who are doing the king's business assisted the Jews because of the dread of Mordecai had fallen on them. Indeed, Mordecai was great in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces, for the man Mordecai became greater and greater. In the last chapter, it says, and King Ahasuerus laid a tribute on the land, on the coastlands of the sea. and all the accomplishments of his authority and strength, and the full account of the greatness of Mordecai, to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of the Medes and Persians? For Mordecai the Jew was second only to King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and in favor with the multitude of his kinsmen, one who sought the good of his people, and one who spoke for the welfare of the whole nation. Now, what honor! Mordecai went from the place of being hated the most by the second most powerful person in all the land. And he hated Mordecai because Mordecai didn't bow before him every time he passed by on his horse. The king had given, passed an edict that any time Haman watched by, everybody has to bow. And everybody did but Mordecai. He refused to compromise, even refusing a governmental order. And this one, who was hated by the vice president, is now elevated to that position, given the signet ring. Everything that Haman owned was given to Esther, and she gave it over to Mordecai. So everything that the enemy had owned, everything that Haman had owned, he now had all that. And his greatness spread throughout the land. Now, what is it about this guy that his surrender that was so special to God that would cause God to honor him like this? For one, he didn't compromise when he could have. It had been easy for him to do so. But secondly, we have no account in this book that after he saved the king's life, that even though the king forgot about him for 8 years, we have no record of Mordecai ever complaining, ever being resentful, ever being bitter, ever clamoring for a position, ever getting upset because he's not getting what he felt like he deserved, not even once. There's something uniquely about a non-complaining heart that reveals a yielded heart. Because if we believe God's ordering our steps, whatever step it is you've been complaining about, you've been complaining about the Lord's sovereign leadership in your life. Mordecai never complained. He was never clamoring for position, never clamoring for recognition. You ever clamored for recognition? So, well, no, Bishop. I mean, have you ever complained when people didn't say thank you or didn't show appreciation to you about how nice and wonderful you were to them? How much you served? He never did any of that. No bitterness, no complaints, no clamoring for position. And even though he had originally told Esther, don't reveal the fact that you're a Jew, when the edict of Haman came out for all the Jews to be killed, Mordecai, who raised her as a daughter, and it says several times how much he loved her in the book, he told her, you need to reveal who you are, and you need to appeal to the king, even at the risk of your own life, that the people might be saved. Then Esther says, if I perish, I perish. What does that mean in terms of Mordecai? Not only was he not complaining, not only did he not get bitter at life situations and circumstances, not only walked around talking about being unfair and being misunderstood, not being appreciated, Mordecai was willing to lay down the most precious thing in the world to him. She was the most important thing in the world. Just like when Abraham was asked to lay down Isaac. And those things revealed to God a heart so yielded to him that he could trust Mordecai with such honor and such favor. Favor comes, is manifest. All of us have been grafted into the life of Jesus and the favor he lives under. But that favor is revealed in our lives as we walk in surrender because it's his favor. It's the favor of Christ. We can't walk in his favor if we aren't surrendered to his will. And as our hearts are yielded to him, as we delight in the Lord, as our hearts are soft before the Lord, dainty before the Lord, then the Lord's able to reveal the honor of Christ himself. He got everything that belonged to Haman. Haman walked around, praised him, had to. And then everything that Haman owned became Mordecai's. Because Mordecai, in surrender, trusted God with all that. Never asked for it. Never complained about it. He was just yielded. I'm going to talk about this tonight at the graduation, but the eyes of God run to and fro throughout the whole earth, looking for anyone whose heart is perfect towards him. Not a walk, perfect walk, but a heart that's completely his. That's what it says in the New American Standard. That he might show himself strong on their behalf. It's nothing deep, nothing secret, nothing magical. You don't have to be a genius. Because all that God is practically and manifestly available to any person, boy, girl, man, or woman, who's available to all that God is. It's that simple. In the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit.